The doctor's curiosity gets the best of her, and she finds herself and her friends in a disaster movie against, well, basically, Stitch without Lilo. Rachel Donner joins me for a quick trip on a Red Cross spaceship while Alyssa is on assignment, more about that later, on This Week in Time Travel. Thanks for joining us on This Week in Time Travel for the week of November 4th. I'm Chip.
And I'm Rachel.
Rachel Donner is back. Hi, Rachel.
Hello.
So we are missing Alyssa and...
We are.
Yeah, but for a very, very good reason. She is hard at work. Elections are coming up on Tuesday. We'll have something to say about them at the end of the podcast. But first up, Rachel, this is the first time that we've had you on since the series started. How are you feeling about Series 11 of Doctor Who?
I love it. I love it so much. It's just been a bundle of joy every week. I love Jodie Whittaker's Doctor. I think she's nailing it and is absolutely Doctor-ish, but making the role her own. You know? And I just I'm in love. I'm absolutely in love. And I think, you know, I kind of agree with some of the prevailing sentiment about the Grace situation, you know, that maybe that wasn't the best choice.
Right.
However, other than that, I've pretty much loved everything else.
Yeah. So I've seen some criticism sort of mounting a little bit in certain corners of the internet since the series began. Even among people who generally like what's happening here, if there is a consistent criticism of the show that's been coming up in the last 5 weeks, and I can't believe that we're already like halfway through Series 11. It just feels wrong. It's that the writing is too simple for some people's tastes, especially after timey-wimey legerdemain of Stephen Moffat.
Yeah, I find it refreshing. And it's not that I didn't like the plot-heavy stuff that Moffat did. I love, you know, a good deal of it. I just think it's good to have change. I mean, this show is all about change. We talk about it again and again. And I think there's a different tone here.
Yeah.
And that having some plot-heavy stuff wouldn't match the tone that this show has and the look and the feel of it and the music of it. I just feel the kind of level of complexity of the plots fits everything else that they're doing.
I kind of agree. I think that, and I'll see what Alyssa thinks about this next week, but I'll try this on for size with you first. I think that these are not simplistic plots, I don't think. I do think that they are simple plots, by and large, up to this point. And I think that Chris Chibnall, the showrunner, is doing that kind of on purpose. Like,
yeah,
it's a simple it's a simple scaffolding so that we can figure out who these characters are.
Yeah.
And as the character relationships are established and the tone of the series is established, once you've done that, maybe you can branch into more complicated storytelling or more challenging storytelling afterward.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, not only do we obviously have the larger TARDIS team, so like developing those characters, but I think it's allowed room that the guest characters have really strong depth to them. And, you know, I feel like I know them by the end of every episode.
We will talk about this particular episode, the Saranga Conundrum, which is the most difficult title to say that I've encountered in years. Before we do that, I did want to hit a couple of quick news items. Alyssa and I have been largely eschewing the news because we've had so much to do and new episodes of Doctor Who to talk about. But there were some announcements this week from Big Finish that I really wanted to highlight. First of them is a box set called The 8th of March that features the, if you'll excuse the term, I'll use the quote marks here, it's what Big Finish used, and we know that it's it's a cliche, but the strong female characters of the Doctor Who universe. There's a story with Ace and Bernice Summerfield. There's a story with River Song and Leela. There's a combination. A story with the Paternoster gang, primarily Vastra and Jenny. And a story with Kate Stewart and Osgood. at least yeah. one of which is a Zygon.
It was funny. I saw that news announcement and I got kind of minorly angry because Ace was the smallest in the artwork.
Right.
And I was
right.
like, give Ace more real estate. But other than that, I thought it's really cute.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's pretty exciting.
Yeah. And then the other big finish announcement that I wanted to highlight was the Torchwood monthly series is coming back. And the first four stories in that series are going to feature Doctor Who monsters. It's like that first round of Doctor Who big finishes that paired classic doctors with new monsters from the series. Torchwood plus Doctor Who monsters, without there being a Cyberwoman context, is kind of interesting. And that's going to include a story that Alyssa just essentially screamed about on Twitter in the last week.
She loves Katie Manning.
She loves Katie Manning. She loves Third Doctor. And
I know. I was very happy for her.
There is going to be a sequel to The Green Death that pairs John Barrowman with Katie Manning.
That's going to be so good.
I know. You're talking about two absolutely bonkers actors and all
the
that.
The innuendo will be strong.
Oh, my God. Well, yeah. Yes, it will. Yes, it will. It's going to be Torchwood. It's not going to be yeah. Doctor Who. So, yeah, the innuendo brigade should be in full effect.
Yeah.
Oh, that's going to be great. So two big announcements from Big Finish that sound really good. And this week, we're finally getting the first issue of the new Doctor Who comic by Jody Hauser and Rachel Stott, and I am so looking forward to seeing that comic as well. Rachel Stott is one of my favorite comic artists, and I got the opportunity to meet both Rachel and Jody Hauser at the Gallifrey One convention last February. I've got high hopes, nay, high expectations for this comic. And that is as much news as we have the time to give. Let's talk about the Suranga conundrum.
Yeah. Base under siege, right?
Base under siege. A little bit of Second Doctor mixed with a little bit of Fifth Doctor, I kind of felt like.
Yeah, I guess I'm not really... I really feel like Jodie's her own thing.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I'm being less compare-y. Although the only moment where I got a little compare-y in this episode was when she whipped out the stethoscope.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was like, oh, yeah.
This is the second week in a row that the antagonist of the story is simply an animal or creature that doesn't know better. It's just operating on instincts. Message here?
I guess you could maybe draw that line, but it's not something that had occurred to me at all, especially with one story being Earthbound.
Right.
Yeah, I don't see that as much.
Chris Chibnall has not gone out of his way to have Dalek replacement or Cyberman replacement bad guys in these stories so far. I do think that there's a bit of an agenda here in, let's see here, we had the Stenza in The Women Who Fell to Earth, and that was your basic alien supervillain. Then there wasn't a bad guy so much as an environment and a idle capitalist in The Ghost Monument. You had a space proud boy in Rosa. But mm-hmm. this was mostly the doctor and friends trying to preserve history. And then poor spiders who didn't know any better. And
but they
then,
were victims of human
mm-hmm, right.
experimentation.
Exactly. And then finally in this episode, the pating, which is basically Stitch. And
which is so funny because I've never seen Lilo and Stitch, so I have no idea what they look like. So to me, I was like, is that a Pokemon?
Oh, wow. So, yeah, I really am fascinated by the fact that a part of Doctor Who's formula, if you ask somebody who's casually familiar with the show, has been the Doctor versus the monsters. And that's just not been something that's been really important to Chris Chibnall so far.
Yeah, I think because there were several different jeopardies going on here, that the fact of what this monster was, per se, wasn't as important. right? Because you still had them being far away from the TARDIS. You had the general and her heart problem. You had the general's relationship with her brother that was a problem. You had the pregnant dude. And then the remote destruct issue was kind of the bigger issue for them, I think, and masking the signal.
This was a disaster movie with every possible disaster.
Yeah. But I still think it worked.
I think it did, too, on balance, but I've got some quibbles. But tell me what worked for you the most about this episode.
I really liked the fact that the men were left to taking care of the pregnant dude, and the women took charge and solved the problem for the most part. The other thing, too, is I'm really enjoying the relationship between Yaz and the doctor. And I think it's been on a really good trajectory, and this added to that. And going back to the first episode, when she was looking to do more and be more, and the boss said, you know, you're not experienced yet. And to me, the doctor is Yaz's mentor. And she looks at her like a mentor and is observing her and learning from her and trying to kind of model her style of leadership that she eventually wants to have as a cop, kind of based on the doctor's behavior. So balancing leadership and mental tenacity, but also deeply compassionate and empathetic at the same time. And I think that Yaz sees that and knows that that's the best kind of cop she can be. And is just learning so much from the doctor on that front. And this just continued that.
I agree. Now, Alyssa last week had some very specific thoughts about where the relationship between Yaz and the doctor could be going.
Yeah, I'm not a shipper on that front. I really think it's a mentor-based relationship.
What are some of the other things that sparked for you on this episode?
I loved the humor throughout. There's definitely a lot of humor around the dude being pregnant thing.
And more to the point, Ryan and Graham just desperately trying to cope with it.
Yeah. Oh, Lord. Ryan's face when he looked around the corner at what was happening, that expression was absolute gold. And the fact that Graham watched Call the Midwife amused me greatly. And then I was just like, of course he watches Call the Midwife. That's exactly the show he would watch.
Sure. But then he walks it back a little bit because he always avoids the squeamish parts.
Which that show has a lot of squeamish. But I felt like Graham's sense of humor is coming out a little bit more because he's a little bit further removed from the death of Grace, and his own like sort of normalized personality is coming out a little bit more. So he has a very dry sense of humor and does that thing in action movies and disaster movies where there's always that side character that basically repeats the situation that they're in a funny way to make it sound more ridiculous than it is, and Graham does that here.
I also like Graham's sort of, he shows off a little bit more, I don't know, moral authority this time around than the character's been called on to show in previous episodes. I like the way that he sort of challenges Dirkus Cicero, the engineer brother to the great general, who is trying to hack into his sister's medical records to find out what's really wrong with her. And when he walks in the room and sees that Dirkus is doing that, he sort of challenges him immediately. And then when Dirkus says, okay, this is what I'm doing, Graham defends Eve Cicero's right to keep those secrets from her brother. I just thought that, you know, I looked at Graham in a slightly different light than I had been.
I can totally see that. And I think that also comes from, we're seeing sort of Graham on his own and who he is individually, as opposed to Graham as he related to Grace or his relationship with Grace or his trying to be the cool grandpa for Ryan. You know, and you just get a little bit more insight into who he is on his own. And I think that's really great.
This is the largest guest cast that we have had in this season of Doctor Who thus far.
maybe the first episode had more.
Maybe in numbers, but I think there are more characters with more to do, I guess. Mm-hmm. I love the chemistry between Brett Goldstein, who plays Astos, and Jodie Whittaker.
Oh, yeah, that was great.
But he makes
the,
a real...
Are you kidding moment?
Yeah.
She says sometimes. That was so funny.
He makes a really strong impression, and then he's gone. You know, he makes the most mm-hmm. of that short amount of screen time because he's our first casualty. There's that tension early on. He's the doctor in charge of the ship, small D doctor. And our doctor, who is still pretty much concussed, having been the one closest to the MacGuffin that they were looking for that turned out to be a bomb that deposited them conveniently on the rescue ship. I'll have something to say along those lines later. But anyway, the doctor's used to being in charge, and the doctor's used to having a level of correct authority, and he's a doctor. This is his ship. These are his patients, including more patients than just the doctor and her friends. And there's that moment when he says, with, again, moral authority, "You're being selfish," and that stops the doctor short. And the doctor says, "You're right. I'm sorry."
Yeah, that was a really strong moment there.
It is, and it takes a lot. Even though Jodie Whittaker has been playing the doctor as less bombastic than some of her predecessors, she's been, the 13th doctor has been quicker to say, "I'm sorry," and to be more, for want of another word, human. She is still the doctor, you know, she still radiates authority, and mm-hmm. for her to choose to give it up when somebody else is clearly in the right, I think the 12th and the 11th and the 10th doctors and, you know, would have huffed a little bit before that. I like the choices that Chibnall and Jodie Whittaker are making for this doctor.
But at the same time, she's still the doctor in the sense, like the scene where she's describing the antimatter drive,
mm-hmm.
I thought was beautiful because I feel like she was in love with the antimatter drive, slightly less than the TARDIS, obviously. But the way she was talking about it was that she just loved the beauty of the science that created this engine.
We've been told that basically this doctor's personality is that they see the universe with the awe and wonder of a child. To steal a line from Star Trek The Next Generation way back in the day. That is coming out absolutely crystal clear. I loved that antimatter scene. Maybe went on a little bit too long, but there is just awe and joy wherever she sees it. And she wants her friends to see it with her. That's why she wants this gang around her this time.
Yeah. But
that was the second week in a row that the question of who's in charge here sort of comes up. Last week, the answer, you know, who says she's in charge and says us, you know, and she's running the show pretty much constantly. Here, she defers when it makes sense, and otherwise she remains in charge. And of course, she saves the day in the end because she is the doctor.
Right. But then there's also the making sure the other medic, Mabel's being empowered by the chief medic before he dies.
Right.
Saying, "You can do this. You can take charge." So there were like multiple threads of that running
yeah.
through.
And that is another thing that the doctor is really good at. Go back to the Ghost Monument and talking Ryan up the ladder.
Yep.
We are continuing to get a clearer and clearer picture of what kind of doctor this doctor is. And you're right. It's hard to compare her to her predecessors. She seems to be not entirely different, but very different.
Yeah, I like it.
As far as the action versus the threat, you know, was this a nail biter in any way? How was the level of jeopardy in the Saranga conundrum?
I think it was about as high as it was with the spiders.
Mm-hmm.
I would say it kind of matched that level. I think the show's doing a really good job of having enough jeopardy that adults can be into it, but not so much that it's going to put off children. I've been sort of thinking about this series in the context of, you know, an 8-year-old watching it. And obviously, I'm not an 8-year-old, but I feel like they're hitting that balance really well.
This is where I am starting to agree with some of the grumpy old men of the internet, especially these last two stories. I stand by everything that I said early in this podcast about Chibnall's making some very deliberate strategies, and I think that they make a ton of sense. But I think the plotting of these last two episodes has been so linear. We are in this space, and then this thing happens to move the plot along, and then this thing happens to us, and then this thing happens. I don't feel like the characters are making a whole lot of decisions as opposed to reactions to the events around them and then sort of evaluating and going on to the next thing. This is a Second Doctor base under siege story. Arachnids in the UK was a Third Doctor science gone wild story. But I don't feel like the characters are in any kind of danger or that there are any great stakes in these recent episodes. If I have any criticism of the Saranga conundrum, it's that there is a lot of running from point A to point B to point C to point D, and not a lot of variation or creativity along the way. The creativity is in, as we said, the character dynamics, finding out who these people are and what makes them tick, and revealing other wonderful parts of the universe and other interesting characters along the way. I think that the plot in this one could have held my interest more.
I mean, I can see that to some degree. I just felt like sort of the summary of the dangers of the Pating. I mean, that was pretty dangerous there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And especially given that, you know, the main medic had died right away.
Right. So stakes were heightened.
Stakes were definitely heightened. And knowing that the general was very ill. And knowing in the back of your head that somehow she's going to have to pilot this ship because she's a pilot.
Right.
And so, like, was that going to be solved? I felt like there was enough there. And maybe the framing of it could have indicated that a little more. I think, honestly, I did think about this a little bit. The design of it may have affected that because it was a gleaming white ship, things were calm, as opposed to if it was kind of a dark, gritty ship with, you know, steam coming out of vents everywhere and looks like little bits of rust
right
everywhere. It might have felt a little bit more dangerous. But everything looked shiny and new the entire time. And it was actually stressing me out how they were keeping the floor clean. But I did think about that I think the design of that ship may have affected how dangerous you thought the situation was.
I think that's a good point. I mean, and you've got a big cast, you may as well cut corners somewhere else. You know, there's a lot of set reuse. A lot of those corridors did double and triple duty. And in that compressed space, it did feel like they were sort of repeating themselves to a certain extent. I do enjoy this episode. I liked it more than Arachnids in the UK. And I will repeat that scaffolding that Chris Chibnall is setting up is certainly adequate for the task of entertaining us with the strong direction. This episode was directed by Jennifer Parrott, if I'm pronouncing her name. It might be Perot, who knows? She's from Australia. She done good, I think.
Agreed.
And strong performances all across the board. David Shields was doing a pretty darn good Lieutenant Commander Data as Ronan the Android. Jack Shalhoub was funny as heck, I think, as Yoss. And we haven't said enough about General Eve Cicero, played by Suzanne Packer.
Yeah, she really, her eyes said a lot. I was really impressed with how she was balancing, trying not to fly off the handle so to speak, with the fear of what she knew was coming, but also be brave because she's a pilot and, you know, she's been in war and she's trying to protect her little brother. I just thought it was a wonderful performance.
This is an episode that, you know, there's a body count at the end, but it's not Voyage of the Damned by any stretch. And I feel like this is an episode that really is reflective of what Series 11 is trying to be. It is trying to be a fresh family viewing version of Doctor Who again. It's trying to be simple without being simplistic, and I do think that they have to be careful about that. It's trying to celebrate the joy and wonder of the universe through the 13th Doctor's eyes, which is a really different look for the show.
Yeah, I agree. And given that there was a body count, but you may not have felt that level of gravitas with the tone that you were alluding to earlier, I just thought the little memorial at the end was beautiful.
Yeah, can we talk about that? It is the closest that the Doctor has ever come to participating in prayer.
Yeah. It was so lovely. And like the fact that she knew the words and chimed in, I thought that was really interesting.
Which is, let me make a side point and then let's come back to that, because she did the thing with General Cicero that she always does with Earth historical figures. And the Doctor rarely does with made up characters from outer space or the future. Never got super excited about Max Capricorn, but
yeah.
Oh, you're General Eve Cicero. Wow. You know, you've got a chapter in the Chronicles or whatever that was called, you know?
Yeah.
But of course, somebody who's that familiar with the scope of history would know this Sarangan incantation at the end.
Yeah. I know. The only kind of parallel I had in my head was Rings of Azkaban.
Mm.
With that level of sort of prayer and devotion.
Yeah.
But I just thought those words were beautiful.
Aside from bits from The Impossible Planet and Satan Pit, where the Doctor confesses to not knowing everything about the universe, the Doctor is not religious by any stretch. And yet, it felt natural to see this Doctor in particular participating in that sort of closing incantation, whereas the 10th Doctor probably would have been standing off to the corner somewhere.
Yeah, like watching it. I think you're probably right there.
So what does it mean that 13th Doctor participated in the incantation, do you think?
I think that she recognizes what they've been through. And I think it was a sort of continuation of her respect of Grace's death and attendance at her funeral. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that this is just something that you do. When somebody that you know or you've just been through something with passes on, you give them the respect that they're due and make sure that the other people around them who knew them feel that love and that support.
I am loving this development. I'm also really, really prone to wanting to dissect it because it is so different from the Doctor's predecessor incarnation.
It really is. And I see where you're going with this to some degree, but, you know, that you have this nagging thing in the back of your head saying, is she this empathetic because it's a woman?
And, you know, I didn't want to ask
well,
that question outright.
But you have to ask that question. I think,
yeah.
You know, it's sitting right there, and whether or not you want to talk about it, it's there. And I think I need more data to make an assessment. I've been thinking about that particularly and a couple other little things along the way with Jodie's Doctor that I really think I need to see the full season before I make any full assessment of those sorts of things.
Yeah, I think these are welcome and interesting character developments.
Oh, for sure.
Regardless of the Doctor's sex or gender, but it is a question worth exploring.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
No answers yet, but as far as the rest of season 11 goes, where would you rank the Saranga conundrum?
I don't know. I know this is weird. I'm just not ranking them.
Are you just luxuriating?
Yeah,
in them?
I think I'm just bathing in the glory for
all
now.
Right.
And I'm definitely still in the honeymoon period with the show. So I may have to, when all is said and done on this series, go back and do sort of a binge watch style, you know, viewing of this whole season and then sort of see where it fits.
Personally, I think that it's not quite up to the standard that I think the first three episodes set, particularly Rosa, but I am still more than entertained.
Yeah, for sure. I'm saying there's only one thing that I thought was a missed opportunity and super minor, but I feel like there was a don't cross the streams joke in there that they did not use, and I was very sad about it.
I did have that moment there. Also, very happy to know that there are 900 Hamilton casts.
Yeah.
Just saying. So we'll have something to say after the credits about politics and voting. We hope you'll stick around for that. If not, you can find us online at thisweekintimetravel.com or at drwhothisweek on Twitter. I'm on Twitter at numeral2minutetimelord. Alyssa's on Twitter at whovianfeminism. She's on Tumblr there as well. And Rachel is on Twitter at rmiriam. This podcast also exists on Facebook. Thanks to Christopher Breen for our original theme music, to David Lohr for our original podcast artwork. Please review us on Apple Podcasts, consider becoming a member of the Incomparable Network, and tell all your friends about us. Finally, this podcast is going out before a very important election in the United States of America.
Yeah, our midterm elections, if you are not familiar with them and live outside of the U.S., the election's halfway between our presidential elections.
As Alyssa shared a few weeks ago, her day job has her out on the front lines working to elect Democratic women, pro-choice Democratic women. She's not here on this podcast because she is working incredibly hard. I don't know if you need to make a disclaimer, Rachel. I think I do. I am not speaking for my employer or the podcast network here at The Incomparable. But this has been an awful, awful couple of weeks for the queer community, for women, for people of color, for Jews and other non-Christians, and immigrants to the United States.
Yeah, there's been some unfortunate actual violence, lost some very good people, as well as some violent words and attacks on people and who they are, especially the trans community and like Chip said, immigrants and refugees who are just looking to escape brutality and violence and find a better home for themselves here. And they've been demonized. And Alyssa, like Chip said, has been working really hard to elect people to help fight that. And specifically the Democratic Party. And in our minds, that choice is absolutely clear.
In our minds, there's one party that's actively making things worse and scarier for people who, if they're not part of the in-group, they're in the out-group. We believe that if you want the world to resemble the Doctor's values, if you want to be kind, as the 12th Doctor said, you have to vote on Tuesday. If you've already voted early, please volunteer to help others vote and encourage your friends and family to vote. There are states where you can register to vote the same day. Take advantage of that and help other people to do that.
And if you have the time and the wherewithal to make calls or help people get to the polls, that's always a great thing you can do as well.
We can't make things better unless we roll up our sleeves and get our hands dirty.
You know, like the doctor said in this episode, believe in yourself and each other.
Hey, speaking of hands dirty, we're going to play out this podcast and our little call to action here with the song of the same name by Big Machine recording artists from my hometown, Delta Ray. We will be back next week on This Week in Time Travel. Hope you'll have good news to talk about then. Bye-bye.
Bye. I could raise the crops from the earth.